Pope John Paul II has died, and the Roman Catholic Church prepares to elect another pope. What was significant about this pope? What will the future bring for the church? And what is the long-term significance of this great world religion? All good questions we'll begin to explore on this edition of Longitude. Today's Monday, April 4th, 2005. I'm Darris McNeely. The world stands in awe this week as the Roman Catholic Church moves through the death and the burial of Pope John Paul II. The Pope had one of the longest papal reigns of any Pope in history. It ended with his death this past Saturday. The Pope had been in ill health for a number of years, and of course in recent weeks he had been hospitalized twice for respiratory problems, almost dying, I believe it was, back in February. The 84-year-old pontiff had ruled the church since 1978, when he had been made pope after the death of his successor, John Paul II, who had only been pope for 1 month. Pope John Paul II, really for many, is the only pope they have ever known. For his 27-year reign, that is quite a long reign for any world ruler at any time. And now the church begins the process of burial, followed by the gathering of cardinals in the Sistine Chapel for the selection of a new pope. There's a great deal of speculation as to who the new pope would be and what part of the world he may come from. Some call are calling for a pope from Africa, some from Asia. Much speculation as to whether it might be another Italian pope or possibly even a German pope. There is really no way to tell with finality until that white smoke comes up out of the chimney of the Sistine Chapel, and a few minutes later the new pope will appear at his window in the balcony there in the Papal Palace in Rome, and then the world will know who the pope will be. Let's take a moment here. Let's put the role of this pope in perspective. A great deal is being written about him this week. A great deal of time is being spent on television, and there is a great deal of analysis going on. First of all, let's look at the pope as a world leader. The head of the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope, is most definitely a leader of great importance on the world scene. He has been for centuries. John Paul II ruled at a very critical time of transition in the world. As the Soviet Union and the communist world began to crumble in the late 1970s and on into the 1980s, this particular pope helped bring down the walls and the structure of the communist world. Now, he came from Poland, where he had been a cardinal in Krakow, as he worked under and probably, no doubt, against the ruling communist government in Poland at that time. This particular pope grew up under the Nazis in Poland. He was arrested at one point in 1942 by the Gestapo. And so he had dealt with terrorist-type regimes and harsh and cruel regimes ever since his youth. When he became a cardinal in Poland, he fought, as I said, against the communists. And so when the communist world began to show signs of cracking and crumbling during his reign, he helped in a large way, many say, to bring that down. Of course, as a world leader, the Pope, this particular Pope, met with over 400 world leaders off and on over his years as pontiff. The Vatican itself is a state to itself. Many don't realize that, but the plot of land there in the middle of Rome that is known as Vatican City is a sovereign nation, prints its own stamps, and has its own sovereignty. And so the world really does look to the Pope as a leader of great stature and great importance in many, many ways, both as a leader of in religion and as a political leader as well. Another perspective to have on the papacy is that of a religious leader. Obviously, the Pope is head over 1 billion Catholics. John Paul II took his role very seriously as the Bishop of Rome and as the supreme leader, religious leader of the world's Catholic faith. And he visited many, many countries over his years. He was the most traveled pope in history. He also worked very hard to bring the world faiths together. He sponsored many ecumenical meetings in Italy, in Rome. He visited at one time the Jewish synagogue in Rome, which was an unprecedented visit. On a visit to Jerusalem, he went to the Wailing Wall and prayed. This, too, was quite significant. He at one point asked for forgiveness for the sins that the Roman Catholic Church had made against so many in the world. He called out for an end to anti-Semitism. In 2002, when he made his historic apology for the sins of the Roman Catholic Church in the past, this was an unprecedented event. Really, what this pope did was to put a very friendly face on a church that has had a very checkered past going back for more than 1,500 years. And that is something to consider. You see, no matter for the apologies and the moves and the Caribic-looking face and demeanor and the very friendly, outgoing personality of this Pope, John Paul II, the Roman Catholic Church still looks at itself as the only legitimate church and faith on the earth. In fact, all other faiths have a subordinate role in Catholic theology. Nothing has really changed from its long-held belief that the Pope is Christ's representative on earth and speaks for God in all spiritual matters regarding salvation. In the past, of course, that particular faith has driven many, many actions of the Catholic Church throughout history, that many actions that have led to a great deal of human suffering, all in the name of faith and religion. And of course, that's what the Pope was apologizing for in the year 2000. And so this is an important thing to remember. In the Bible, in Revelation chapter 6, Jesus Christ rolls out the various seals of Revelation, the first four of which are known as the first four seals of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And the first of those seals is a rider on a white horse. And as students of Bible prophecy well understand, that is speaking of a horseman and a system of great false religion, and speaking of a system that is going to once again ride in the time before the second coming of Jesus Christ. That's what he was foretelling there in that prophecy. False religion, masquerading as the true faith, will be a factor in end-time events prior to the second coming of Jesus Christ. It's another very important point to realize about this church, about this great world faith, and especially about Bible prophecy, because as, again, so many analyses are going on at this time of transition and the death of the Pope and awaiting to find out who the next Pope will be as that Pope will lead the Roman Catholic Church, it's also important to understand the church, the papacy, in the role of Bible prophecy. In that role, there is a great Bible prophecy that is well to remember. In Revelation chapter 17 and 18, there is a vision of a woman riding a beast. In fact, a scarlet woman riding a great scarlet beast. And that is one of the most dramatic pictures in Bible prophecy at that picture that we have here. When we read in Revelation 17, as John saw in a vision, he was carried away in the spirit in the wilderness. I'm reading from Revelation 17 and verse 3. And he wrote, and he said, I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, and when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. Now, John's prophecy goes on to give more detail in the remainder of chapter 17 and on through chapter 18 here in Revelation to talk about this system that the Bible labels as Babylon the Great. In fact, in Revelation 17 and verse 18, it mentions that God says to John in the vision, he says, the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. There are many descriptive passages in these two chapters that help us to understand really who this woman is that is riding this beast power and what it is. Again, students of prophecy well understand that this is speaking of a combination of church and state. And this is speaking of a great system that has had much impact on world scene and world events and will once again in the future. There's more that we could go into. We don't have time in this particular podcast to do so, but we'll come back and have another one and discuss this in greater detail and continue on with this session in Revelation chapter 17. As I close here today, I would like to remind you, those of you who are listening in our audience, that we have a free booklet entitled The Book of Revelation Unveiled that will take you through not only this prophecy in Revelation 17 and 18, but all of the book of Revelation to help you to understand exactly what that book means. It will unveil the meaning of this book of Revelation, this significant book of prophecy. Well, again, as the world watches the events that are unfolding in Rome this week, we'll come back and we'll have some more podcasts and we'll be talking more about this and bring out more information and helping you to put it all in a proper context and understanding of Bible prophecies so that you can have a fuller understanding of these significant events that are unfolding on today's world scene. That's all for today. I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening.